Okay. So, this week, in a normal year, we would have two parshas. One, this week we spread it over. This year we spread it over 2 weeks, and we have Vayakal Pekudei, which I'm sure you know is
about the Mishkan.
The Mishkan, and it is the repeat essentially of Truma Tzitzaveh, though in the opposite order. Right? Truma Tzitzaveh is the instructions of the Mishkan, and Vayakal Pekudei is the is the actual implementation of those laws. Now let's leave aside Rashi, who thinks that the Truma Tzitzaveh is out of order. But let's take the Ramban. The Ramban assumes the parsha is actually in order. Either there was the Tivui of the Mishkan, presumably the end of Har Sinai, and then the Egel, and then there was the implementation. Now, one of the questions that people always are bothered by in this parsha is, look, it's great that we're going to repeat. You know, you really could have just accomplished all of Vayakal Pekudei Pachod o Yoter with a few psukim that said something like, and the Jews did as Hashem commanded. Maybe you want to throw in a few psukim to acknowledge the fact that they did it in the proper architectural order rather than the proper theological order, right? That they started with the outside and then moved in rather than starting with the Aron and then moving out. But why do we repeat the psukim? Or why do we literally just repeat everything in detail, down to the last hammer blow of everything that is done in the Mishkan, right? It just seems totally superfluous, especially if you are in a Chazal-like framework where you're looking for what has become termed as omni-significance, right? That every word has something to add. Right? What exactly is being added? Like, I understand. So,
according to the Ramban, it kind of makes sense.
Why?
It's kind of weird to phrase, and they did it when they didn't do it yet. They had the whole story before they did it.
But still, even according to the Ramban, you could say, Trumet Savadel Zidels, then Kitisa, and then the Pasuk will say, and then after the Egel, they built the Mishkan Kasher, Amar Hashem Moshe. Right? Like, why do we have to repeat every detail? Right? It's just like a copy and paste. Look, there are certain things that emerge that are important in the repetition, but it's not like Chidushim. Right? Sure, it emphasizes Kasher at Tziva Hashem at Moshe 100 times, which we can talk about why that is. Right? Maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow. But why repeat it? Right? Tell me, why do we repeat it in painstaking detail the same way we did? You know, there are many ways you could have summarized this.
Well, obviously the changes need to be.
There aren't changes in terms of the actual building. Like, the order is, you're right, the order. But you could have said, okay, and they did it starting with, right? Or you could have just said, Vayas et Hamishkan, Vayas et Haron, right? You could have shifted the order without copying all the details. Right? You could have said, Vayas et Hamishkan, Vayas et Right, you still could have done that, right? You could have indicated the order, but why literally just repeat all the details? So Rabbi Chaim used to say that to understand it, you need and this was, you know, his expansion of the Ramban, he gave a mashal to understand the context. He said, imagine the following. Right, you have a couple who, they're engaged, right? They go out for years, whatever, right? Not a firm couple, I don't know, right? They go out for years, right? They've been building their relationship. Finally, he proposes in some romantic, whatever, I don't know, right? And they get engaged. What? Yeah, they're not for a person with a Mishnah Torah, right? Exactly. And then what do they do? Yes, then what do they do? They decide that they're going to buy a house. And they spend the next few months planning the house. Right? So, Lohan says, if you imagine this, right, every act that they're involved in is an expression of their love, right? You know, they're imagining their home together. Right? They go, they buy the house, and then they go to the planners, and they start imagining, okay, we need a big dining room table. right? Because, you know, we really want to throw parties, right? We're really social. We love having over our friends. We need a big dining room table, right? And, you know, we need this type of couch because I want a couch, you know, I don't want a leather couch. I want a cloth couch because I like sleeping on the couch. And I can just imagine, you know, watching TV together and falling asleep on the couch, right? Whatever, that's one level of intimacy, right? And then they start, you know, buying beds, right? And they start talking about their room, right? And that's even more intimate, right? Because now they're starting to imagine what it'll be like when they're sleeping in the same room, the same bed, and they're imagining what they want in the bed. And then they start thinking, well, you know, how many rooms do we need for kids that we're going to have, right? Every detail, right, is a way of manifesting the relationship that they have. And then a week before the wedding, the bride runs off with the best man. Right? And they call off the wedding, and it's a disaster. You know, they call off the house, they call off the whatever, right? You know, I don't know how they did this, right? They call off the furniture, they call off everything. And meantime, it doesn't work out well, shocking, right? And slowly they realize they're both miserable, and some friends intercede on their behalf, and they say, you know, it's time for you to try this again. And the husband, or not the husband, right, the engaged couple, they decide they're willing to try it again, and they slowly rebuild trust, and they decide that they're going to try it again, they get engaged again. And this time again, they want to buy a house, but this time, when they want to buy the house, they just go into the furniture place and they say, look, give us the floor model, right? Why? So they're looking to see, right? Well, why do they do that? Because they may rebuild the relationship, but it's too painful to go through that again, right? It's just, you can't, right? It's very hard, even if they're willing to get married again because they think it's the best thing, it's very hard to rebuild that same level of intimacy that you had before. And, you know, anything that reminds you of the pre-sin state, so to speak, is painful. So now Rav Chaim said, Rina Mashal Ela Nimshal. Right? That's essentially what happens with God, right? They get married. Right at Har Sinai, the Jews and God get married at Har Sinai, and Hashem says, "I'm willing to build a house with you." Right, and he goes into painstaking detail. What will it take for me to come down and, in whatever that means, live in this world? Right, which is an absurd expression of intimacy for God, who doesn't really need a place to live at all. But he says, "I want you to build me home, b'shachanti b'toham, so that I will live amongst you." Right, not amongst them, but fundamentally amongst you. And then, right, after God has gone through all these details and all the planning, God, right, the Jews then run off with an egel, right? Which in the mashal of the Torah is consistently referred to as adultery, right? Right, I mean, this is true, right? Vayiznu, right? There's a reason that idolatry is referred to as nut, right? Vayiznu, because it is nut, right? If the relationship of God and the Jewish people is alpi mashal, that of a married couple, then avodah zarah is alpi mashal, adultery, right? That's the mashal throughout. You see it in Yeshayahu, right? You see it in its strongest form in Hosea, right? Hosea, where Hashem commands Hosea to marry a prostitute as a symbolic act to represent the treason of the Jewish people, right? And have children from this marriage with a prostitute, right? But then Moshe, right, the friend here, manages to intercede, whatever that means, and convince God not to destroy them, and then convince God to rebuild the relationship, right? It's not enough that you don't kill them, but we won't go to Eretz Yisrael unless you come with us. And Hashem said, I can't. I can't be amongst you. If I'm amongst you, I'll destroy them. And Moshe says, no, make a new brit in which you can handle it. Right? It's the second brit. Right? God said in the original brit, before the Yigamot Midan Rachamim, I mean, before God expresses himself through mercy, the consequence of God being present amongst the Jewish people and they sin is death. And therefore, Moshe negotiates a new relationship of Rachamim. And now Rav Lachumtin says, in a human relationship, at that point, God would have said, look, I'm willing to rebuild a relationship, but it's on different terms, and part of those different terms is the level of intimacy is not the same. Kamash Malan, that's not true. Right, Kamash Malan, that even though the relationship's on different terms, right, even though, now that it is a Rachamim, God is not like human beings. And if he says he's going to rebuild the relationship, he's going to forgive and he's going to still come and live amongst the Jewish people, then it is going to be with the same intensity that he planned before, because God doesn't hold grudges, and tshuva is actually capable of reversing time. And there, Rav Lochenstein argued that's the purpose of Vayakum B'Kudei, that we go through the exact details so that God says it's not just that I'm living amongst you, but I'm willing to invest the same into this relationship, so to speak, as I was willing to do before the sin of the Egel. And that's not a given. And therefore, the painstaking detail here in Vayakum B'Kudei, the Chiddush is that God was willing to repeat it despite the fact of the Egel. And therefore, the Mashal and Nimshal break down on purpose to show you that God, the way that God negotiates relationships is not identical to the way human beings would in the same type of relationship had it been reflected through the human lens. Okay?